out in our favor as the Japanese won 4 of the Saudi Cup stakes after having the big Breeders' Cup day last fall, which, and I mentioned it yesterday, I was surprised during the Eclipse Awards, they announced the NTRA Moment of the Year, and the NTRA Moment of the Year was the Japanese performance at the Breeders' Cup, which I thought was funny that we were celebrating another country's performance at our breeders. You know, I'm not trying to be jingoistic or anything. I just found it funny that that was selected as the American racing moment of the year. It was fun for the Japanese. It was fun on Breeders' Cup weekend, but I just found it funny that was selected the moment of the year, the Japanese performance at the Breeders' Cup. Subsequently, one of those horses who played into that ran yesterday. Marsh Lorraine was in the Saudi Cup itself, but on the undercard, as I say, the Japanese entrants won 4 of those races with nice international appeal. So it's been a big half a year or so for the Japanese racing industry on the international scene. Pulled up, and we'll start our stakes replays with a look at the Saudi Cup. Obviously, Mandaloon, the number 7, had high hopes for that one. Other American entrants, number 8, Midnight Bourbon. Number 2, Art Collector, was over there. Mishriff, the number 9, top class international runner. Country Grammar was over there for Bob Baffert. Country Grammar had not been seen since winning the Gold Cup out at Santa Anita in May. Country Grammar ran pretty well. Country Grammar, the number 3 horse. Midnight Bourbon, the number 8 horse. They're in the thick of things late. Mandaloon kind of threw out the anchor early and did not make much of an impression there. See him coming down the stretch here. But it does wind up being, with a big late run, number 4, Emblem Road, getting it done at a monster price. And you can see the two American horses right there on the inside. Emblem Road runs them down late. Emblem Road, based over there in Saudi Arabia, but is a Kentucky bred by Quality Road. As I say, though, has been based over in Saudi Arabia. He wins at the big price. Country Grammar off the layoff for Bob Baffert, second. Midnight Bourbon, third. More of the story. Maybe Marsh Lorraine, the Japanese runner I mentioned, wound up 6th in there. But the story may have been a couple of the also-rans. Running 9th, Mandaloon, that was disappointing, certainly, taking the betting action he did, coming off the win to kick off the season down at the fairgrounds. A win over Midnight Bourbon, and Midnight Bourbon came back to kind of validate that. Mandaloon, not so much. And Mishriff, the really nice international runner, just it wasn't his day, winds up last in the field there. So there were a couple of notable dud performances that played into the news coming out of the race. But as I say, it was Emblem Road for Saudi Arabian Connections winning their big race, $20 million purse. But it was also kind of fun. Right after the race, I went to the computer to look it up. Ridden by Wigberto Ramos, Wiggy Ramos, and if you've been around as long as I have, it's Wiggy Ramos. It used to be a race here, right? And sure enough, looking it up, Wiggy Ramos, 53 years old. And I looked up some of his stats. Won the Florida Derby in 1993 with Bull in the Heather. Subsequently, I want to say from what I read yesterday, he wound up, he was riding over here for some Saudi Arabian connected horses. Somebody asked him to go over and ride briefly. He came back. But then in 1998, he had a connection, and he's been over there riding in Saudi Arabia since the late 90s. So he's been over there, you know, a couple of decades. He's been the champion jockey over there a few times. And at 53 years old, he sweeps by the field and upsets yesterday's Saudi Cup, picking up the better portion of the $20 million purse. So, again, congratulations to Wiggy Ramos on making an unusual but a successful for him career move over the past couple of decades. Let's move over to Aqueduct yesterday, and Aqueduct and Gulfstream had a couple of horses making their seasonal debut. Well, I'd say that, actually, seasonal stakes debut for Green Light Go. Latruska, who we'll watch later, it was her seasonal debut. But Green Light Go for Jimmy Jerkins. Up here, we may remember this one. Started the career with a nice win at Belmont, and then came off the maiden victory as a two-year-old and won the Saratoga Special. Second to Tis the Law in the Champagne. That was back in 2019. So Green Light Go, a nice runner for Stronach and Jimmy Jerkins early in the career. There was a portion last year the horse was running for Jerry Hollendorfer at Oaklawn and Monmouth. Came back into the barn at Jimmy Jerkins, and he did have a start. Ended last year running a really close up second in the fall highweight, but he started this year on January 13th, winning an optional claimer, which seems like maybe a good confidence builder because he got a 101 buyer. So fires a nice triple-digit buyer on January 13th and then got entered into the stymie yesterday. And we'll watch the stretch run, Green Light Go. Jimmy Jerkins said it afterwards, you know, it wasn't necessarily that strong of a field. I thought it was a salty field. But, yeah, I don't know if you would label this as a super strong bunch. But Green Light Go, the number one horse, gets it done. Chart margin over three lengths is the short price, 55 cent to a dollar favorite. So you got $3.10 for this victory. And again, you see horses maybe making up a little bit of ground, but really no threat here to Green Light Go. I have not seen a number on this race yet, but I mentioned it yesterday and in subsequent comments after the race, Jimmy Jerkins said the same thing coming out of this. It did seem logical that they would take a look at the grade one Carter, and Jimmy Jerkins yesterday after the race said exactly that. So kind of surmise that would be a logical spot coming out of this. And we'll see. It does seem like now with what we've seen, that close-up second in the fall highway to end last year, now kicking off the five-year-old season with the optional claiming win in January, the nice stymie win yesterday. Green Light Go will be an interesting kind of fun player on the New York older division scene. And we'll see, you know, throughout the career, the horse has pretty much been at a mile or shorter. There were a couple of mile and a 16th races at Oaklawn last year, and he won one of those. So I don't think stretching out is out of the question, particularly if you're talking one turn down at Belmont. But we'll see what the game plan will be. The 7-furlong Carter, again, you got a grade one, and it's a clearly distance-wise right in the wheelhouse. That makes sense next up, but we'll see what the rest of the season might hold for a Green Light Go. But so far, you know, knock wood, always fun to root for Jimmy Jerkins. Looks like they have, as I say, a nice player for, you know, New York older division stakes action this year. And I would expect we would see Green Light Go, if things continue, potentially up at Saratoga this summer, stepping into some stakes company. Mentioned it a few minutes ago, but also, and this was literally the seasonal debut, down at Gulfstream for Latruska. She was in the Royal Delta. And this was a relatively weak field. Crazy Beautiful last year as a three-year-old filly had shown some promise. And so Crazy Beautiful, you know, a legit stakes quality runner. But otherwise, it looked like Latruska probably had this bunch over a barrel. And that's the way it worked out. And yesterday's Royal Delta, grade three event, $150,000 up for grabs, mile and a 16th. Latruska took him start to finish, and you see her on the front end, and it's just, you know, paid workout time for her. The chart margin winds up to be three, but there is no threat here as she goes off at, as you can see on the screen, 1-9, $2.20 for the victory, and Latruska off to a nice start. Fausto Gutierrez, the trainer in the winner's circle, was asked, do you have any idea of what's next? And he kind of said, we'll see how she comes out of this and kind of make up our mind. And then he tossed out Apple Blossom. And we'll see if her schedule is like last year. Well, again, knock wood, we'll keep our fingers crossed because, I mean, she had an 8-race schedule last year that was just phenomenal. Started things out in March. Well, she started things out in January in a stakes race at Sam Houston. But then in March went over and tried the Azari, Then the Apple Blossom, the Ogden Phipps, the Fleur-de-Lis, the Personal Ensign, the Spinster, and the Breeders' Cup Distaff. She won 6 of 8 last year, including up here in the Personal Ensign. She won the Apple Blossom. So you would have to think, given what they did last year, they would look at that as a little bit of a blueprint for going forward and trying a similar scenario this season. But we shall see how it plays out. You know, they may pick their spots, and one or two of those may come out of the mix, put together a little more condensed season as far as the number of starts. But it was a good seasonal debut yesterday. I haven't seen the numbers yet, but it was a very solid performance. You know, she was supposed to do it to that field. She did it. Looked pretty good. As I say, a little bit of a paid workout. And also, for anybody who was curious if the Breeders' Cup Distaff signaled, oh, she's going the wrong way. Clearly not the case. That Distaff, Acacia, was on the Gulfstream signal yesterday, and she said, and you read things like this, that she was out at the Breeders' Cup, obviously as part of the broadcast team, and she didn't think Latruska looked as good as she had earlier in the season. So it, potentially the season caught up to her by then, but the way that crazy pace was, it was also hard to see her not kind of folding there in the Breeders' Cup Distaff. But again, some people might have taken that performance and the fact that maybe she didn't look as good as she had earlier. Oh, she's going the wrong way, but it was... Now, with a little bit of a break in the comeback, I think we can look for another really fun season from Latruska. So, again, good comeback for her. Yesterday, Rainbow Six carryover, and they said they expected $6 million. That's the press release that came out from Gulfstream Park. Ed Brianetto on the Handicappers Report yesterday, he was saying wouldn't surprise him to see 8 to 10. I'm always a bad judge. And then I said this yesterday. You get your 10 minutes from post, and there's $1.5 million in the pool. And I say, see, they aren't going to put that much money in. And then you get about 2 minutes to post, and it just starts shooting up. And that's there was one point yesterday where I was on the air watching, and it was about $4.5 million, and I was doing a little handicapping, and I looked up, it couldn't have been 30 seconds later, and it was $5.5 million. So it's like a half a minute, it went up $1 million, and they eventually put $7.5 million in the pool yesterday. And if you played the rainbow, I hope you hit it. It was a very hittable sequence. I put a little ticket together on Twitter, and unfortunately I think I missed one leg. I might have missed two legs with a photo. There was one horse that was maybe kind of tough, but the sequence yesterday, first, again, I love these. And when there's these big carryovers and it turns out to be something, somebody, some average Joe could have put together a $48 ticket and hit it. And I think that was the case yesterday, and walk away with $2,100. It was $2,116.42 for the 20-cent increment. And as I say, it was a very hittable sequence. It started out with a $5.60 horse who was the favorite. Then there was a $9 horse that was the second favorite. Then there was the tough horse. There was a $22 horse that was the fifth longest price in a field of 10. But it was a Bill Mott runner that was playable. So I can certainly see people having had that on their tickets. You know, it's $22, but it was a horse that, again, was not a crazy stretch by any means. So a favorite, second favorite, then the fifth favorite in a field of 10, but it was a Mott runner that was playable at $22. So $5 and change, $9 and change, $22. Then a $4.80 favorite, a $4.80 second choice, and the day ended with another second choice. It was a tri-second choice. There were three horses at the same 4-to-1 odds, but a $10.40 horse. So you had $5, $9, $22, $4, $4, $10, and you wound up with $2,100. Again, a really hittable sequence yesterday. And as I say, I like to see that because to me, you know, it's a lot more fun to spread the money around, and you have to think to $2,100. A lot of people, the little guys, hey, put a little chunk of that aside, have some fun, but a lot of that's going to go right back into the game, as opposed to some of these days where you get some crazy long shots and it pays, you know, $200,000 to a handful of people. This, to me, is a lot more fun. Spreads the money around and gives a lot of the little guys a chance to, hey, raise their hand. I had a great day today. I put together a $40, even a $100 ticket, and you wind up with $2,100. It's a fun afternoon. So hopefully you out there participated in that and wound up with one of those winning tickets, which, as I say, was on the sequence, was pretty playable yesterday and pretty hittable. So hopefully a lot of that, hopefully there's a good chunk of that money that came up here to the Albany-Saratoga area. All right, I'm going to take a break. Again, a little bit later on, we'll be joined by our friend Steve Bick. He was down at Oaklawn yesterday, so I saved the Oaklawn replays for his segment, but we'll take a break. We'll come back, and we will take a look at some handicapping action for this afternoon. Maybe we'll go over to Oaklawn, do a late pick five action for this Sunday afternoon. I'll be back on, of course, a little bit later for live looks all afternoon on OTB Live in, you know, an hour and a half or so, but we'll give you a little head start in this next segment. And again, a little bit later on, Steve Bick, Oaklawn stakes recaps from yesterday. All of that right after this. Stay tuned.
To find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing, Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them, Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the clubhouse racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. I had a little more news to touch on as well. Obviously, to those of us up here watching New York racing, always fun to follow the Ortiz brothers. And IRAD, career victory number 3,000. I will say, though, and Thursday, got career victory, you know, milestone 3,000. And I will say, had some victories down in Puerto Rico, too, that I don't think were counted. Because if you pull up Equibase, they're already showing 31. 103. So I think he had about 100, the article, 92 victories in Puerto Rico. So I'm guessing they weren't included. Or there could have been some other international races maybe that weren't. But for the official number on Thursday, IRAD got 3,000. And I was curious where his brother sat. And I pulled up his stats from Equibase. So IRAD Ortiz now over 3,000. Jose Ortiz, 2448. So there's where the brothers are currently. And again, congratulations to Jose Ortiz. Also, some news from earlier this week. Of course, Medina Spirit, the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission, had disqualified Medina Spirit from the Kentucky Derby, issued a suspension, 90-day suspension to Bob Baffert. He requested a stay on that. At the end of the week, the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission denied the stay of suspension in the Medina Spirit DQ. This looks like probably goes to court now, where there's no telling how long that will stretch out. But there was a good quote. I want to say Jay Privman, I read, said Mandaloon, who kind of tossed in a clunker yesterday in the Saudi Cup, Jay Pribman said something to the effect of, yeah, Mandaloon bounced off his win in the Kentucky Derby 5 days ago. Good line there. But we will see how this all plays out. One of Baffert's owners I read on social media was quoted yesterday as saying, Bob Baffert, one way or the other, is going to have a horse in the Kentucky Derby. And we talked about that the last week it was, I guess, with the future pool. I think a lot of people probably played all others thinking, even if they aren't trained by Baffert, some of those Baffert horses may get in. Now, I don't know whether after yesterday you're salivating for Newgrange, but we'll see how it plays out. It's just not a great situation for the racing game. And I read a tweet yesterday that said, somebody said, gee, a lot of people say they're never going to bet a Baffert horse again, but, you know, his horses keep going off at 3 to 5, so you're not, you know, walking the walk and talking the talk. If you want to show the racing game, you know, don't not bet the Baffert. That, I don't know what that proves to anybody, unless you say, I'm not betting the race at all, and I'm going to show the racing industry as a whole and hold my handle back. But to look at a race and say, gee, the Baffert horse looks best, but I can't bet him, so I'm going to bet some other horse, I don't know what that proves to anybody. There are much better ways to show if you are upset about the situation than to, you know, kind of squander your betting money trying in some way that won't affect anybody to make a statement. So, again, I saw that on Twitter, and it may be, you know, just the typical social media kind of buzz that leaves you scratching your head sometimes. Speaking of Derby Trail, do want to alert you out at Sunland Park this afternoon. There is a three-year-old race to Mind That Derby, which will play into the Sunland Derby, you would have to think, coming down the road. But $100,000 up for grabs for three-year-olds going a mile and a 16th out at Sunland. And Classic Moment is in here for Steve Asmussen. American Experiment also in for Steve Asmussen, and that's why I bring it up. They are 9-2 and 4-1 on the morning line. I'll be really interested to see if that holds up. Asmussen shipping in a couple of horses like that. Classic Moment broke the maiden at Churchill last November, 4th in the Springboard Mile, 6th in the Southwest, but I think it's going to be a square fit with this group. And American Experiment broke the maiden up at Saratoga early in the meet last summer, then went out to Del Mar, tried the Del Mar Futurity, and ran third behind Pinehurst, who ran well yesterday. And the three-year-old debut was the middle of January and ran second. So American Experiment is also going to be interesting. So, again, going off our time at, what, 4, 5, 6? About 6 o'clock, I think it'll go off at Sunland Park today, the Mind That Bird Derby out at Sunland Park with the two Asmussen horses. Maybe a little bit interesting. Also worth maybe paying a little bit of attention to, and we will certainly have it here on the network this afternoon. This one will be about 4:45. The return of First Captain for Shug and our friends at West Point Thoroughbreds and Bobby Flay and Company. It's a Bobby Flay homebred, but the horse was purchased right up the road here at Saratoga, August of 2019, $1.5 million, lived up to it early in the career with a maiden breaker last April, followed that up in a non-winner, so one nice win, and then stepped into the Dwyer in the third career start, won that. Subsequently tried the Curlin up at Saratoga and ran third and has been on the sidelines since. And there were some quotes from Shug that he's excited to get the horse back. Seems like the horse is working well. They're kind of going to get back in and look to get back into stakes action with this horse. The I was going to say Starcross. That's the wrong word. But the horse that had shown talent early in the career, and as we've kind of gotten later in the career, hasn't quite lived up to that. But Dennis's Moment is in here. Doc Amster, who is a, you know, hard knocker, could be a little bit interesting as well. But, again, the 10th race this afternoon at Gulfstream Park. The return of First Captain. 3 wins and 4 career starts. Career start number 5 and kicking off the 4-year-old season. All right, as noted earlier, we'll take a little look at the Pick five at Oaklawn today. Obviously, I haven't looked at scratches, and I'm not recommending a ticket here. I'm just kind of going over the sequence and give some thoughts. If maybe a little bit later today you want to take a look at that sequence, either the pick five or maybe that late pick four, which will be encompassed in this group. But the late pick five today at Oaklawn. Fifth race will kick it off. 10,000 non-winners of two lifetime, 8.5 furlongs, 3 and the 5th at Oaklawn, 3, 10, 9, and 6, Graves Mill Road. And if you look at the PPs here, they're doing something. It's kind of interesting. The waiver situation has been something around the country at various venues. Great idea. If you take a horse to the sidelines, a claiming horse, and you're on the sidelines for, I think probably most places it's about 6 months, and you come back at the same level, you can run for a waiver. So in other words, you're not in for the claiming price. So it gives connections, owners, a chance to do what's right by the horse, take the horse to the sidelines if they need it, spend what money needs to be spent, taking care of the horse and maybe treating whatever issue there might be. And then you come back and now you put some money in the horse. And the horse is, let's say, a $10,000 claimer. Well, you don't want to have put the money in the horse and then run for $10,000 and have somebody take it away when the horse might have needed a race. And so you're out there just trying to build up some fitness and somebody comes in and takes the horse away from you. You also don't want to put the horse in where it doesn't belong, at a $20,000 or a $30,000 claimer, because you're just kind of knocking heads there and may discourage the horse, really. There's a situation either way where it's not enviable. So with this waiver system, now the horse can come back at the right level, get a race if they need it, win if that's what they're ready to do. But it does right by the horse and by the connections and whatnot. But down at Oaklawn, they put a twist on it. If you don't win that first race back, you can now stay in for the waiver in the second start back. And this horse, if you're looking at the PP's Grace Mill Road, has come off a couple of second-place finishes, and they were both for the waiver. Now comes back for the tag, but off the 2 second-place finishes, third start back, Graves Mill Road looks logical. Locke Jarman in the second spot. 20-1 on the morning line, but it's a Robertina Diodoro horse. Didn't claim this one, but it's first time in the barn of Diodoro. Did toss in a real clunker last time against similar. It was off a little bit of a layoff. I'll hope that one puts some fitness in. They had the blinkers today, moves to Diodoro. You know, again, big price, and I think off the last effort, we may hold that. People may see the move to the Diodoro barn and gravitate a little bit, but I think off the last race, we will still get some value. But I thought the horse could be interesting. Southern Rags in the third spot. Claimed out a similar company at Churchill in November. That's going to be the question mark, the layoff. But if this horse is ready to run, should fit here. The workouts aren't really indicating one way or the other, but they're steady. So I'll put that one in the mix as well. In the fifth at Oaklawn, 3, 10, 9, and 6. Race number 6 at Oaklawn, maiden 30 claimers going 3/4 of a mile. 9, 11, 1, and 8 for me. I'll put My Coralina on top. Nice second place finish last time against maiden 20 claimers. So moves up a little bit, but just looking at the rest of this field, source looks like it's going to be a snug fit. The last race was a lifetime best buyer figure. May indicate this horse is, you know, kind of hitting good form right now. And I think a trainer who is good off the claim can hold that form or maybe improve it. So My Coralina on top. Kino in the second spot. Federico Villafranco trainee that tossed in a clunker last time, but was claimed out of that. And you go down the page, and I think the horse is better than we saw last time. So I'm going to kind of trust that. But that is the question. If the horse just go the wrong way, that may be the case. But again, more consistently seems to fire better numbers. So I'm going to look for a rebound for Kino. And then Romantic Comedy. Lightly raced, tried maiden specials in the debut, now moves in for a maiden tag. The maiden special try was not that good, but it looked like a race where maybe the horse just needed the experience. And with that one under the belt, stands a real chance of moving forward. Plus, you had the class relief, should be a player in the sixth at Oaklawn, 9-11-1-8. In the seventh at Oaklawn, 9-7-3-2. I think the sixth is also a little bit interesting. Northern Diamond at 6-1. Chris Hartman's having a really good meet, and this one comes off the claim for him. So the sixth scares me. But I went 9-7-3-2. I put Invaluable on top, off the claim for Robertino Diodoro. M&M Racing is kind of his main claiming client. Clearly, they do very well down there at Oaklawn. And this one, actually, if you look down the page, was claimed away from our friend Roddy Valente at Saratoga this past season. Since then, has been at Keeneland, and now three starts at Oaklawn. And I think overall, the Oaklawn starts make this one interesting. Plus, you throw Diodoro off the claim in the mix. Ms. Blue may wind up being the horse to beat. Lots of early speed. Gets a 5-pound apprentice on board who's riding decently down there. So, again, with that early speed, make play catch me if you can. That's always dangerous. Untouched Elegance, 10-1 on the morning line, also has some early speed and comes off a couple of wins, Los Alamitos and Santa Anita. So comes in from Southern California. I think class-wise is going to class up very nicely and seems to be in good form. But as indicated by the fact that I've named five horses, I think it's an interesting and kind of competitive race. I went 9-7-3-2, with the six being dangerous as well. Eighth race on Sunday afternoon at Oaklawn. I have it 6-5-4-1. I will put Candora on top. Goes out for Jerry Hollendorfer. Tried Stakes Company here at Oaklawn in the latest effort. More than that, and again, obviously he's getting a little class relief stepping out of the Stakes Company, but more than that, this one has an angle that I like quite a bit. If you're watching enough, you've heard me talk about it. Had a little bit of a layoff from September until January. Now has come back and has put in two sprint races. Third start back off a layoff, stretches to two turns. Just an angle I like quite a bit. Now, it's more interesting when there's a little bit of a price and the horse maybe gets ignored, because with this angle, the two sprint races don't necessarily have to be that good. It just sets it up for that third start back in the stretch out. All of that said, Candora is 5-2 on the morning line. So I like the angle. The angle is a lot more fun when, again, maybe you're getting some value for it. But we are jumping on the angle with Candora, logical player in here. W.W. Fitzy in the second spot. Comes off a nice optional claiming win last time. Tried Stakes Company 2 back. Got back to more suitable company for Robertino Diodoro and ran well. I think off that mile win, the mile and a 16th today, going to fit this one squarely in the front windshield. And then Maggie Moss, Tommy Amos have Misty Vale. Comes up off a couple of front-end scores down at the fairgrounds, so in good form. Looks like the speed of the race. And there are a couple other horses that maybe can go out there and challenge. Misty Vale looks like the speed of the speed. We get to the backstretch, and this one's loping along easily. Misty Vale might be tough to reel in. Race number 8 at Oaklawn, 6-5-4-1. And we wrap it up at Oaklawn at just a little after 6 o'clock our time. The finale today at Oaklawn, Arkansas Bred Maiden Specials. And I say it all the time, these Arkansas Bred races tend to be a puzzle. But I have it 1-8-3-11, Wayland Springs on top. Three career starts all this season at Oaklawn. Boy, the start two back really stands out and kind of stands out in this bunch. But that start two back is bookended by two that are okay, but just match up evenly with this bunch. So what will we get today? Today, this is more the kind of the validation of where this horse is. Do we get another pop up to a really nice number, or do we kind of show that those mid-50 buyers are where this horse typically wants to land? I kind of hope that maybe we're on a little bit of a good, bad. We'll bounce back to a nice spot. The horse gets Lasix today. I'll put Wayland Springs on top. Kilgore in the second spot. Also three starts so far. This one, two nice starts at the beginning of the career before throwing in a number last time that was a little bit light. But It was a second place finish, so I think this horse is eligible to be in the mix with these. And Top F Road Rules. Also, last time, number went south a little bit, but that was the second start back. Who knows? Maybe there was a little bit of a bounce. We'll look for this one to rebound to a better number for Danny Pites. Blinkers on today. I think can be a solid player in here. In the ninth and final at Oaklawn, 1, 8, 3, and 11. All right, that gives you some ideas anyway for Oaklawn for Saturday afternoon. Again, we'll be back live a little bit later on to take a look at that and more racing on a Sunday afternoon live, but gives you a little bit of a head start. Not a head start, but a recap. We were previewing, now we'll review, taking a look at some of the stakes action yesterday at Oaklawn and just get a feel for Oaklawn overall from our friend Steve Bick. He will join us after this break live from Arkansas. Stay tuned. Having trouble finding us? It's actually quite simple. Whether online or on your TV, it's never been easier to watch and wager on championship horse racing with Capital OTB. Simply log on to CapitalOTBBet.com. There you can watch our morning shows, live stream races, and wager on our state-of-the-art wagering platform. You can also watch from the comfort of your home on Spectrum Cable Channel 1250 or Fios Channel 467. And win more with Capital OTB.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Bridgestone is an outside front. They're coming down.
In a glossary way, and because it's a New York bred, okay, but it the story is the story is the filly.
Oh yeah,
here comes High Chaparral. High Chaparral, the defending champ, to take it to Bob. These two are travels head to head with Joe Hart bearing down on them. It's going to be a three horse photo finish in the turn. Here's the wire, photo finish.
Back to Racing Across America, and now I'm excited. I couldn't see during the break, but Mr. Bick from Arkansas said he's got a nice setup this morning, and so we will welcome him in on the swing through the south. Oh, I do like that. Yes, yeah, stepping it up. The swing through the south last week from Fairgrounds. This week I thought we'd reach out to you, get a little Oaklawn update as well. Good morning.
Good morning. You can, on consecutive Sundays, you and my ever-loving Derby Barbie back home. Wifey is home. Hi, Tina. I'm still your husband. I have fought off any possible intrusions. Love you lots. I'll see you in March. Consecutive Sundays from New Orleans, Hot Springs. You can talk to me next Sunday from Hallandale Beach, Florida, after the Fountain of Youth. And then the following Sunday after the Tampa Bay Derby. So we're on this big swing, and it's going good. Kind of a nasty few days here with ice, and you wouldn't know you were.
I pulled up a picture from your Twitter, and I think it's you and Hammer. I had Hammer on yesterday, but you're both sitting there in parkas.
It was so cold here. I mean, bone chilling. And I give Hammer credit because he said to me, you need a couple more layers. And he gave me that that was sort of a golf sweatshirt. And that helped because they've got that crazy indoor paddock like you see at Pimlico and Laurel. And so they open a garage door and the interior, for those that have been or haven't been to Oaklawn, that paddock is basically central in the clubhouse, the grandstand. And so it's whatever temperature it is outside comes whistling in. And I mean, it was in the 20s and not just cold, but like windy cold and biting through you. I don't know how those exercise riders and everybody, I don't know how they did it. I mean, New Orleans was, there were some chilly mornings, but this has been, I mean, miserable. It's going to go into the 70s this week. So I think maybe it's over. But they did a great job with the racetrack. The racetrack could have frozen any of those nights, but they managed to train every day, so nobody missed any more training. And certainly the fans and the horse players and the stakeholders that come pouring into Hot Springs, it wasn't bothering them. There was another nice Saturday crowd on hand here today, yesterday, and made for the always festive atmosphere at Oaklawn. It's a special place. It really is the Saratoga of Mid-America.
Yeah, and I said that the Hammer yesterday, Rick Hammerly, for folks who didn't watch yesterday, racing coordinator down there, we had him on yesterday. And I have a sister who lives up in Fayetteville, and they were fighting ice the last few days, too. She lives way out in the country, and they were kind of trapped because they have to drive over a dirt road, and it was all icy up there. A little further south is Hot Springs, but they were experiencing very similar weather. But talking with Hammerly yesterday, he said you guys went out to dinner at the casino, and that was rocking a couple nights ago. When I was out there, they had the slot machines, the historical racing machines, but the full-blown casino wasn't there. But that sounds like that has become a real destination. But, yeah, reading the follow-up articles this morning, they were estimating 31,000 people there yesterday. It really is Saratoga of the South.
That number must be based off of estimates and basically taking what the on-track handle was and dividing it by a multiple, because 31,000 is a little bit of an overly optimistic number.
Then it is Saratoga crowd, of the South.
But I have been here for Arkansas Derby days when it was beautiful. You can't have that kind of a crowd in that building. Yeah. You can have that kind of crowd when the infield is open. They're going to try to open the infield next week. They were hopeful of having it open yesterday, but it was too wet and nobody would have been able to be out there for the day. I don't know how the TVG crew that they had a tent in the infield where they do their broadcast from. I had, even with lights and heaters, it had to be uncomfortable. So anyway, they get that kind of crowd, but you need the infield for that.
But as you say, maybe divided by the handle. What the handle yesterday was big too, 15.6 million. Great day of racing. I love the Oaklawn racing, and it just shows other people do too. And with the purses they're putting out there, nice fields and a lot of fun. Wanted to touch on one more thing. I pulled up from your Twitter feed. You had a picture of jockey agent Joe Santos, and I think it was just this past summer. There was a Saratoga special, kind of a season-ending party downtown, and he was there. I kind of talked to him for a while. Fun kid. He's a character. I want to say he has tattoos of the jockeys that he works for, and their season total. He had like a crazy series of tattoos that reflected on his jockeys. But as they say, he's kind of a character. I didn't listen to the interview, but I have to pull it up.
Really had been looking forward to this, and it was a bit of an overdue privilege to get him on. What he has done is really quite clever. And for those that aren't familiar with this is Jose Santos's son, who's 27 years old. And with the change in protocols in racing offices in terms of how they're drawing the races, Santos understood that he could represent jocks at multiple venues. This has sort of been attempted a couple of times unsuccessfully, but he has been able to implement it. And he's handling, I think right now, seven or maybe even an eighth rider. And that includes guys that are riding at Sam Houston, that are riding at Fairgrounds, that are riding at Oaklawn. And as the season progresses, he'll transition, you know, into Indiana and into Churchill and so forth. It, very clever. He's incredibly hardworking. He's on top of all of it. And I give him a tremendous amount of credit. He's out there promoting his riders. He's in contact with them on a regular basis, you know, daily. He explained how he does it. So a lot of credit to Jose Santos Jr. For you know what he's been able to accomplish. And the fact that I've been at two of the venues that he's handling jocks, Rene Diaz, who is a bug that is making a splash at Fairgrounds. Tom Amos tells me he loves the kid and thinks very highly of him. So Jose Santos Jr., you can follow him on Twitter, JoeSantos33. Well worth admiring what he's done at such a young age. And I kidded him and I put that picture up on the listing for the show on Friday. I pulled out that famous, not this one, the other picture of him with Jose up on the dais, up on the cupola at Churchill Downs after Funnyside won the Derby. That's the picture of Jose Santos Jr. that I, you know, recall the most. And then later on, there's a famous picture of him in a tuxedo at that year's Eclipse Awards as well. So yeah, very nice. And we had a really fun conversation that people really responded to. I got a lot of response, people saying how refreshing he was and just applauding his you know, upbeat personality and his approach to the game.
Yeah, as I say, I haven't listened to it yet, but looking forward to it. And I had a fun conversation with him, like I say, last summer at the Saratoga Special event they had at the end of the season. And he seems like a character and a fun guy. And yeah, it's certainly worth touting as a guy, an up-and-comer in the industry. All right, let's jump into it. We were talking before we went on the air. I think we were both impressed with the Honeybee performance. Grade 3 event, 300,000. And as I say, talked to Hammerly yesterday, and he mentioned, and it was worth mentioning with Dwayne Lucas, you look on the PPs, and there is that Triple Crown nomination signal there. And after the race, it sounded like Wayne Lucas, maybe that would be a thought we will see going forward. But boy, she was so impressive in the Martha Washington, Secret Oath, the Wayne Lucas horse. Yesterday, she goes off at 30 cents to the dollar. She's the number 3 horse. You can see here, as they come out of the gate going to the first turn, didn't get out fabulously here, so has to work a little bit. But as they come down the stretch, you will see she validates what we saw in the Martha Washington. Give us your impressions, and what were the impressions around Oaklawn yesterday of Secret Oath?
Well, people might have been looking forward to the Rebel, but they knew that if there was going to be a performance that would resonate and a performance you know, that we might herald, it was going to be from this filly. And watch what's going on here with Louis Contreras. He is in a bit of a, you know, for a couple of strides, you wonder, you know, what is he going to do here and how is he going to extricate the filly? And it doesn't take, you know, but a couple more jumps for her to just basically thread the needle and blow. Look at him here. You think to yourself, how is she going to get through here? He's throttling her back. And I thought for a beat or two, I thought, yeesh, what's he going to do? And when she gets the opening, she just zips right through. She jumps a path from the two path, you know, down inside and accelerates around the turn, which is not easy. And then just powers away from, you know, what was a modest group of competition that Ugiri, you know, there was some thought that Ugiri making her 3-year-old debut, she could come forward, and she ran okay. And the right price was John Ortiz's John Ed Anthony horse, that Ice Orchid, who ran again okay. What was most notable was when the time went up, the 1:44.3, you know, basically you imprinted that in your mind and you said, okay, let's see what the boys do. And we'll talk about it in a minute. But it was pretty obvious here that not just visually and in stopping the clock, but in terms of impressing, you know, by doing something with a little bit of a hiccup involved, that she only further enhanced, you know, her reputation and the expectations going forward. On the show this week, we did speculate a little bit that if she won this race, she got her points for the Oaks, Kentucky Oaks, that would be plenty. And she could then consider, depending on the level of effort and how impressive it was and where the competition looked, that she could be considered for the Arkansas Derby, which then could potentially give her a choice of running either in the Oaks or the Derby. I don't see how Bryland Farms and how Dwayne Lucas, I don't see how they resist that. We'll talk about the Rebel, which was just a disaster for the three-year-old boys scene. She's the star. And frankly, she's one of the best three-year-olds of any sex running in the country right now. There's another part of this that is achingly sad, and that's Arrogate. I mean, you know, here's Arrogate's, you know, first really big star with his first set of three-year-olds. And it you know, the fact that he's gone so you know, early on, and that he's not going to get a chance at a full career as a stallion, you know, if he was going to get horses like this, and from what I understand around the barn, she is just a dream to be around. Apparently, easy keeper and a sweet filly, one that is eager to please. There's just everything to like about this. And, you know, Dwayne Lucas, he's got his detractors, but having Dwayne involved makes for an interesting sidebar and an interesting element. So there's nothing but positives associated. A 92 buyer basically cruising down the stretch. Secret Oath, pretty darn exciting. And she was absolutely the story. The picture you see in front of and behind me, I took that picture down the stretch. What you see in the background, that's the Hot Springs National Park mountain tower that you can see for miles and miles around. And I thought that she was the story yesterday at Hot Springs.
Yeah, and when we talked to Hammerly yesterday, he kind of led into the race and said, you know, some people think the best three-year-old of either sex tomorrow is going to be Secret Oath, and that seems to be the way it played out. I listened to Nancy Holthus talk to Wayne Lucas afterwards, in the Winner's Circle interview, and she said, you know, Arkansas Derby, and he said, oh, you know, you have to have the best, you have to really, he invoked the name of Winning Colors, which I thought was interesting, but he said, you have to think you have the best horse of the crop, and so he said, I'm going to wait and see what happens in the Rebel this afternoon, make decisions from there. Well, given what happened in the Rebel, it'll be fun to see if she does turn up in the Arkansas Derby, no question about it. And one way or the other, just to have Wayne Lucas show up on Derby weekend with a contender, Oaks or Derby, I think is going to be a fun side story.
Well, I mean, right now, they're going to have, I think next week is the Oaks pool. And she'll be 3-5 in the Oaks pool, 4-5. But you know, then there is the speculation. It's kind of funny. A friend of mine from LA texted me. Said, I'm visiting my mom in Vegas, and do you have any Derby sleepers perhaps to put a future wager on in Vegas? And at first I said no. This was like on Wednesday. And then on Thursday, when I sat down and was handicapping the weekend, I texted him back. I said, Vince, I said, I'll give you an oddball Derby hopeful. I said, if you want to take a crazy future wager, make it on this Secret Oath before she runs, because that scenario made perfect sense. Get your 50 points for the Oaks and then go get the Arkansas Derby. And all she'd have to do, the way things are shaping up, all she's going to have to do is be first or second in the Arkansas Derby, and she would have the choice. So, you know, and you saw how rateable she is. I mean, I don't like using the push button moniker, but she really feels nimble and tactical. She's not a big filly, you know, so she's not one of these horses that if you interrupt her stride, she's going to, you know, it's going to take a 16th of a mile to get her back engaged. She's light on her feet, and she's tractable. There is just nothing but positives right now with this filly. So, especially considering what happened, you know, 3 hours later.
And let's go into that. We have a few minutes left on the show, so let's get some thoughts on the Rebel. And, you know, the notable story here, I guess, is just it's fun. The one-eyed horse, and it's a New York bred, and they took a shot shipping down after running second in the Withers last time. Had only one win on the resume, the Maiden Breaker at Delta Downs last November. But again, second in the Withers behind early voting in the previous start. And then Un Ojo gets it done 75-1. Ethereal Road 15-1 second. Number 9 Barber Road runs third, and Kavad runs fourth. New Grange disappoints as the 4-5 favorite running sixth. I like Dash Attack disappointing running seventh in there. So again, things kind of fell apart here in the Rebel, but as I say, kind of an interesting side story, a New York bred, a one-eyed horse, and getting it done at a big price. But yeah, it's hard to think this one's going to play into the Derby trail much further down the road.
Well, no, play into the Derby road, he got 50 points. Well, he's in the Derby.
It's hard to think he's going to play into the Derby. Let me put it that way.
Listen, who knows? This is a lay-a-ban Mike Moreno and Eric Guillo bred Southern Equine. One of the incredibly weird scenarios out of this, and watch Un Ojo down on the inside there, the four. This is a horse that got a great ride from Ramon Vasquez. While you're watching, by the way, watch how clever Ray Lou Gutierrez is in here with Barber Road. Because Barber Road is in behind. Now watch Barber Road. Look right there, cut down to the rail. He followed Ramon Vasquez. Ray Lou immediately understood that the footing was a little better inside, and he cut in there. I thought that was a great move. And here comes Barber Road, who's just going to miss second because of Ethereal Road holding on at the wire. Un Ojo is an interesting case. And when you go back and you try to say to yourself, what did you miss? It's not a question of really what you missed about this horse. Although, if you do go back, take a look at his two-turn races versus his one-turn races. The Withers and the Jean Lafitte. Those two races are his two best races figure-wise. And Mike Moreno, apparently, the decision to come here and not stay at home at Belmont under Tony Dutrow, the idea was, let's go for two turns. Moreno insisted on that. And Ricky Corville, who had him in Louisiana, Ricky didn't even come. He didn't even show up. It's kind of funny. But the whole idea here was to come to this race because it was two turns. And that, that's a very clever maneuver by Moreno. So Un Ojo, kind of a cool story. Everybody loves a one-eyed horse. That's like, we've got one every couple of years, right? We had Pollard's Vision. And then we had, what was the other one that we had just a couple of years ago?
Pollard's Vision was the one I remember. But
another one.
You're right. And it had also had that the eye in the name, I think.
Yeah, as does Un Ojo.
Yeah.
Listen, this is a great win. Happy for Ramon Vasquez. Delighted for Ricky Corville, who gets his first graded stake win as a trainer. Does a good job in Louisiana mostly. Ashley Broussard, who's actually sidelined right now, got badly hurt. Had her leg really mangled in a spill at Delta. She is on the sideline, so lifts her spirits, I'm sure. But 84 buyer, nobody that you were expecting to take a step forward did so. Barber Road ran another competitive race, and I think he's going to keep hanging around. Obviously, Lucas will go forward with Ethereal Road, and why not? Kavod, I think, needs a turn back. This is a horse who's run two strong races on the lead, but he's a one-turn horse. I think you'll start to see him angle toward the Pat Day Mile. Chasing Time, disappointed. No excuses there. The Asmussen horses here at Arkansas have been just blah. Yeah. He's run at least three in each of the preps. The Smarty Jones, the Southwest, and now this, and he's got nothing to show for it. And then New Grange, who I didn't understand the 3-5, the 4-5. Those horses came home very slowly in the Southwest. I thought you needed to look for a fresh face. I tried Chasing Time, but this is a group that that, you know, the ones that are on the path here, they're just okay. Nothing special. So it'll be interesting to see who shows up for the big money Arkansas Derby at 100 points in 4 weeks.
Yeah, and I took a little shot with Dash Attack. I was disappointed there as well. But like you, I took a shot against Newgrange. And I mentioned it earlier, and you talked about the Asmussen horses at Oaklawn so far. Sixth place finish in the Southwest Classic Moment. He's going this afternoon in the Mind That Bird Derby out at Sunland as his American Experiment off an optional claiming second at Oaklawn for Asmussen. And they're sitting at 9-2 and 4-1 on the morning line. I don't think you're going to get close to that on the Asmussen horses out there. But, Steve, appreciate the visit. Update us, radio show back up and running. What's going to be the game plan this coming week for the radio show?
Well, we'll be here for the week. I've got the HBPA. The reason I'm staying here, the HBPA convention, which starts on Tuesday night, and I'm moderating a panel on Wednesday or Thursday. And so we'll do a lot of HBPA issues the middle part of the week. Then we'll get into the big preview for the weekend. You got the San Felipe, the Fountain of Youth, and the Gotham. It's a mammoth weekend of action. So we'll be looking forward to that. You do have some early draws tomorrow. Gulfstream will draw that Saturday card. So you'll have your Fountain of Youth Day action, you know, ready for, you know, plenty of handicapping. You know, lots of other, you know, catch up. I still, you know, we got back 3 days last week, and we still have some things to cover from the week that we missed. Then on Friday, after we get done, we'll head back toward New Orleans to fly out Saturday morning. Get to Fort Lauderdale. We'll be able to take in that Fountain of Youth card. We'll broadcast from the studio a couple of days, and then we'll head to Tampa, and we'll broadcast leading up to the Tampa Bay Derby. And then after the Tampa Bay Derby, 3 days at OBS at the Ocala Breeders' Sales March Sale, and we'll broadcast from there before coming home. If I still have a home, if I still have a wife, if Derby Barbie will still have me, if she hasn't changed the locks, I'll be home soon enough.
I'm sure she's a very nice person. I can vouch for that. I'm sure you're all set. And you keep cycling in the Twitter icon picture. I want an attractive woman kissing me on the cheek is my Twitter icon, but you've got it working for you there. So I will also say hello to
Tina. We'll get a picture of Tina kissing you.
I don't know whether that counts. but you know, should I turn it down? I don't know. We'll see. Appreciate the visit and the rundown. And, yeah, we'll be checking in again as you're making the swing. Envious. And I will recommend follow your Twitter feed, because on the drive up you had nice pictures of land. I'm envious just of the places you're visiting. But I also, man, when I make these road trips, I get in the car, turn on, try to find something on the radio or stick in a CD, and I'm place to place. But you're stopping at all you're getting the landmarks. You've got the crazy graveyard visits where you find kooky stuff. And so it's fun to follow the Twitter as you go from place to place.
Well, I'm a history buff, history major. So that part I enjoy. I always wanted to see Natchez, Mississippi. And I was basically going right by. If I had a little bit more time, and there is a chance I could do this Friday afternoon, I was thinking of stopping at Vicksburg as well. Vicksburg is just up the road from Natchez, but Natchez is a small, it's much smaller than I expected. But you've got 8 famous antebellum mansions that remain. Natchez really did not have a lot of interest in pushing on the Civil War front. They capitulated very quickly. And Natchez did not want to be involved, essentially, as a community. And so for the most part, Natchez was maintained. It was not leveled by any means by the Civil War. So it's intact. I also found something that I did not had ever heard of. You know, growing up in Hartford, you're very familiar with the Ringling Brothers fire at Hartford, which was horrific. Then a couple of years years later, that was 1940. In 1944, in Boston, the Coconut Grove nightclub fire, which killed over 400. Natchez, in 1942, in a black roadhouse nightclub, known as the Rhythm Club, which was part of the Chitlin Circuit, they had a fire that killed 209 patrons. That is woefully unknown in this country. I mean, we all know, you know, the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire in 1911, which was a landmark in labor, in the history of the labor movement. You know, so many others, that Beverly Hills Supper Club in south of Cincinnati, very famously. But this was one I had never heard of. And unbelievably tragic story. And I don't go on these trips and just, you know, go right to the racetrack and then on to the next. I also wandered through Magnolia, Mississippi, where Lynyrd Skynyrd's, when the plane that crashed, there's a roadside monument 8 miles off of 55 that was really moving, you know, by a grove of trees where the plane went down. I'm a buff for this kind of thing, and I'm sure we'll find more on the road back to New Orleans. And of course, happy Mardi Gras to everybody on Tuesday. Let the good times roll, get yourself a king cake while there's still time.
And I was following Twitter, and I almost just reflexively almost tweeted out Freebird when you mentioned Lynyrd Skynyrd, because when I hear Lynyrd Skynyrd, I automatically have to yell out Freebird. But I saw the historical marker for the fire, and you're right, you listed a lot of the historical fires that are very well known and had changed laws in the country and whatnot. That was one, yep, I wasn't familiar with either, so that was interesting. So again, I will tell people to pull up the Twitter feed, not just for horse racing, but for some of the historical content as well.
I'm a font of information.
No doubt about it. And I will continue to tout you. If anybody is ever going to visit a racetrack and you've never been in that area before, send Steve a tweet and he'll tell you where the restaurants are that you can frequent, because you know all the best spots. Steve, as always, appreciate the visit. Travel safely, and we'll check in again.
Talk to you next week, everybody. Thanks, Seth.
Sounds good. All right, that'll wrap us up for today. Fun show with some stakes recaps, a little handicapping, and the live look at Oaklawn yesterday from Steve Bick. And I'm going to wrap it up. Before we do that, I want to thank our friends at Gulfstream for their sponsorship. Gulfstream Park and their championship meet. We appreciate their support. As I say, we'll be down there in just about a month's time for the Florida Derby. Really looking forward to it. And then I scheduled a couple extra days to sit on the beach. I don't know whether I will be tweeting out historical facts. I will more be slopping on the lotion and sunglasses and sitting on the chaise lounge. But we'll see. We'll see. Maybe I'll be inspired. Otherwise, this afternoon, we'll be back in about an hour or so. Looks like they're still showing replays at Gulfstream, and it's still a little while before we get to the NIRA pregame. So we're going to be in plenty of time for those pregame shows. And, of course, we will be live all afternoon. I'm going to take a look at some Oaklawn and some Aqueduct. We'll plug another one in there, probably Gulfstream. Again, we have that nice 10th race. Don't forget the 10th at Gulfstream today, the return of First Captain. That should be fun as well. All right, Seth Merrill, Racing Across America, wrapping it up for this Sunday morning. As always, we appreciate your tuning in. We wish you a lot of good luck this afternoon, and we will be back live looking at that afternoon racing action in just about an hour or so. So we'll see you then.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.